Hey everybody, thank you for being here. We are live. Today is a significant event for two reasons. One is because we've been trying to get Miss Jennifer Hobbs on here for a minute, but due to the weather, we had to reschedule, and that was very frustrating. Today we're having another crazy weather day, but we're keeping our fingers crossed that it will not interfere with this episode because she has so much to share. The other reason is because of everything that's going on. I just wanted to take a minute just to ask for you to pray, regardless of your political stance, regardless of how you feel about everything. This is affecting a lot of people, obviously in the Ukraine and all those that are in uniform and out of uniform. A lot of us are really feeling this deeply, and it's hitting us pretty hard. And so I just want to ask you for your prayers if you pray, and hope that our world is, continues to go in a better way, go in the better direction, because our kids are being affected, our families are being affected, and all those things. So I just want to take a moment for that. And also, one last thing, I promised my friend that I would do this because I talked about her coffee yesterday, how it was insane game changer. And I know I have a lot of friends that are coffee connoisseurs and they have businesses. And I told Miss Carrie Beavers of Soldier Girl Coffee Company, what is in your coffee? Because I was on fire yesterday. And so I'm drinking it today. And I actually want to put up her website really quick because you need to go try it. So, regardless of what how you feel about this, I'm going to say it. It is hemp infused, and there's something in it that makes it amazing. And so, I want you to go check her out. Tell her that we sent you. Tell her that you want what Annette's having because it's amazing. I'm having the vanilla bean, but she has another one that's on sale right now on her website. So go to this link right now or Google Soldier Girl Coffee Company and get yours because it is seriously that good. So now we're going to get to more good stuff after this little video. Sorry, just kidding. Okay. Now we're going to add the important person to this show. And that's Jennifer Hobbs, author Jennifer Hobbs. So thank you for being on here today. You have quite the story, ma'am.
Thank you so much for having me. I had to laugh because I always say that, like, just kidding. So like me to start it that way. But yes, the story is a lot. The whole journey was a lot. And as I read your book, we have a lot in common. So thanks so much for having me.
No, of course. So I think we were like separated at birth because you're just as quirky and silly as me. And you know what? When we have to do podcasts like this or anything in front of people, we just act ourselves, right? Because there's so many people out there just trying to be perfect with all the perfect things. But we're just like, you know what? I just played that video twice on accident. Just kidding. Thanks for watching. Like, it happens, right? So, but you are hilarious, and I wish we could meet in person. We will meet in person soon. But I love watching you because you're so authentic and you're just real. And so you have been putting yourself out there more with all the things that you're doing. But before we get to that part, tell me how in the world did you join the military at 17? Because I was literally sitting at my kitchen table with a recruiter at 17 and a half, 18, and I was like, nope, can't do it. Can't do
Yeah. Well, I ended up getting to the point where we were also sitting at a kitchen table. And he actually came to my first book signing. It meant a lot to me. But for myself, and I was one of those kids that had quite a few family members that have served. And so it was not, I wasn't a military brat, but I admired that, you know. And honestly, as you'll read in my book, like one of the biggest turning points for me that kind of was the nail in the, what's the metaphor? Nail in the coffin. The thing that was the nail in the coffin was when I convinced my brother to let me wear his Marine uniform for Halloween. Like I'm kind of super nervous to even say that out loud, 'cause I know that's just like so frowned upon. Like if you want to be looking at it that way, he was out, you know, so it's not like I was just taking it from his closet before he returned to duty. By that point, he was out of the military, but putting on that uniform, I didn't even need to go show it to anyone. I just needed to see myself in it. I have pictures of that day, and like, I felt like such a badass. Like, and I was, that was the thing that was like, yep, I need to be in this uniform. So that sparked it even more. And then when I did find out that it would help me with college, I had no other choice but to be intrigued with that, coming from a single parent family home and, you know, like struggling with socioeconomic status. And so it was a done deal when I pretty much already knew, had my decision made before I had the recruiter come to my house. But I didn't have it made, and I really wanted to be a military police. However, I wanted to join then. Like, if they were going to let me join, this was 16 when I'm meeting with the recruiter. 16 years old. Dear God, that's so crazy that we even allow that. But that's a whole nother story. like, so anyways, I'm 16 years old, and he's telling me about all this, and I want to be a military police. However, I wanted to do the split op option that's offered in the Army National Guard, where I could attend basic training the summer before my senior year, return for my senior year, and then do my MOS, my job training, the following summer. And military police school was longer than my summer. So there went that idea. And I'm looking at all this other stuff that does not sound that exciting, that had like local places I could drill at. And then I really went for truck driver because a fellow classmate of mine and a friend that I had known for a while through like church choir, he had joined the National Guard. He had told me about it, and he had joined as a truck driver. So, hey, I'll be a truck driver. And I'm sorry, what? You said I get a $6,000 sign-on bonus? Where's my pen? Like at 16 years old, sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, that's a lot of money for a 16-year-old.
Yeah, where'd it go?
So how long did you serve for?
I served for 9 years. When I returned from Iraq, so I had a deployment, and I got deployed on December 7th, the anniversary. Actually, they called us up to let us know we were getting deployed. They called us on Veterans Day of 2003. They really kill it with the holidays, this deployment. They call us on Veterans Day of 2003. And actually, I'm sorry, back it up. Like 9 months before that, they called us on Valentine's Day to mobilize us. We only got mobilized, like they told us we were going. I withdrew from school, which again, that's in my book, but we only load stuff up for a week, and then they send us home and they're like, we're on standby, get back to your life. And I'm like, what life? And so 9 months later, we do get the call on Veterans Day, and we are activated. We have to report on December 7th, anniversary of Pearl Harbor. That was when our 15-month deployment started. And now I forgot your, oh, okay. So when I got back, that was about the point where in the National Guard, you sign for six. And like, if I remember right, four of it is active status. Two of it is like on call or whatever. And instead of going for my last two inactive years, I decided to sign for three more for two reasons. For one, because there was this part I didn't want to let go of it. And I always thought I would be a lifer and retire. And I didn't want to let go of that huge feeling I had with them and that year that we shared together and all of that. The second reason was that they don't tell you when you join that, you know, that 4 years of free college has to be done when you are on active status. So like if you're deployed during those years that you've enlisted, you don't get to use that National Guard grant when you are when you're discharged. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, I want to go back to school. I want finish those 4 years I was promised. So that was another reason why I signed. So I did 9 years.
During those 9 years, did you ever think, what the hell am I doing? Mm-hmm. And did you have support from your family or your friends while you were doing it?
I definitely had those feelings, you know, especially right there at the beginning showing up. And it's a whole, you know, I just was in high school classes yesterday, you know, and now it's the weekend and I am doing a number of things that I have never experienced. And I would say as far as support, I did have support from, like, my mom was in the National Guard as well. My brother is a Marine. And so at home, like, I lived with them. And so they were supportive. And, like, we always we were a strong family unit. As far as my friends, yeah, they were proud of me, you know, but we're all 17 years old. They can't really relate to, you know, I get back at the end of summer from basic training and they want to throw a party for me and that's all good and everything, but they don't understand that, like, while you're over there complaining about whatever that I'm sitting here trying to tolerate listening to, I'm sitting here thinking about how tonight I get to have a shower without shower shoes. How nice. Like, so you're just, you know, and it's, I ended up having to, something I grew through and had to learn is not to be angry and irritated toward people because of that, because it's just, it's not their fault. You know, like we are shaped a whole different way and go through completely different things that we, you know, signed up for. And so, that just kind of separates us a little bit.
How do you feel? I was talking about this last week about the term, thank you for your service. How do you feel when people say that to you?
I personally... I am grateful and honored that people take the time to say that. I do, however, though, feel awkward saying, you're welcome, or no, thank you. And so recently, I don't know what I was listening to. I may have been on a Wounded Warrior Project group chat. And one of the things that was pointed out as a great thing to return and say is when someone says thank you for your service, to respond with thank you for being someone worth serving for. And wow. So that was really powerful. Like, and even if you don't know someone and you don't know, like, maybe they are a really lame, shady person, like, the fact that you are respectful and honor, you know, you took the moment to honor that, like, then thank you for being someone worth serving for. Like, that's the reason why some people sign that dotted line, you know, to serve your country.
That's really good. That just
it is. Yeah. It is.
Because I never, when someone compliments me or says thank you for your service, I'm always like, oh, no, yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to say. And I feel bad because it's like, I don't know. Like, that was my calling and I did it because that's what I wanted to do. Let's change the subject. It was so weird. It's so weird.
Right. It has definitely made me more like, you know, now I'm 38,000 years old, but I make sure like anyone I see in a hat, I say that too. You know, one of the other things that I also heard is a really good thing to say, because like for some of our Vietnam veterans, like they didn't have the welcoming that we have. And so like something that I heard is great to say to them is like, thank you for your service and welcome home.
Oh,
like, man. And that's so powerful too. Oh my gosh. And so, and I've also, sorry to interrupt, but I make sure to say it to any first responders I come across, like, thank you for serving your community.
That is so great. Cause you know, all these, you see all these, I'm going to say Facebook posts of those that have been recovered and they're finally coming home to their families. And it's just like, man, I cannot imagine all those soldiers that were never found. And so to say something like that to someone who had served in World War or Vietnam, I can't imagine. I love having random conversations with someone like that. And they get to just sit there and tell their story because they just want to be heard. They just want to share a part of their life. And you just want to like hug them and be like, oh my God. Yeah. So powerful.
Oh, totally think. Oh, sorry. I think it blacked out for a minute. I may have interrupted you.
Nope, it's okay.
Some people think that they have the mindset of like, oh, you know, grandpa doesn't want to talk about those days. He never has wanted to, when sometimes that's not always the case. Sometimes like they really do have stuff to say and it's got to be the right moment. And you definitely just got to be there to listen. And maybe it starts with questions just like, what was your favorite MRE in the military? You know, like, what was your favorite weapon you shot, or what was the coolest place you've been to? You know, like questions like that.
Yeah.
Don't go there. You know, they're not intrusive.
Yeah. No, I love that you said that because my father-in-law is a Marine and it took him decades to finally be in a place to where he was able to talk about some of that. Mm-hmm. And, but we did, we used to tell our kids, grandpa's not ready to talk about it, 'cause they would have questions. And then just finally one day with one question, he was able to continue on the conversation, but it's touchy. It's hard sometimes, but when they're ready, they're ready. 'Cause they've gone through a lot more than what we've ever seen. So,
yes.
Yeah. So there was a point in time when you were deployed that you lost some members.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it was a very rough deployment for the 1544th Transportation Company out of Paris, Illinois. Rough because number one, we're transportation. So our main mission was to be the gun security for civilian truck drivers who hauled the mail to all these bases in Iraq. So we're going north, we're south, you know, we're all over. And so with roadside bombs and, you know, sometimes small arms fire attacks like that, that was very prominent. But what super sucked as well was we were on a base called Log Base Sites, and it was legit like half a mile long and a quarter of a mile wide. It was so small, and it was right outside of like a much larger base. So like I always describe it as like we were the mortar net for this base over here that, you know, would have probably been a lot cooler to be at. And so we got mortared so much there, you know, people had kept track of how many mortar rounds came in that year, and it was over 230 some. Fortunately, most of the I shouldn't say most of the time. Fortunately, like some of them hit outside of the wire, or fortunately didn't hit people of those 230. And for this, well, the first 24 hours of being on that base in Iraq, we get our first mortar attack. Like clearly, people 1,500 meters in Abu Ghraib see us roll in. They're planning all of it, and we get mortared, and we lose our first soldier in the first 24 hours. Talk about an eye-opening, devastating thing. Especially like our unit consisted of majority. I know it's like around 60% people like were 32 or under. Like these are so many people in their 20s and 19. And we lose our first soldier that day and had quite a few casualties. And then over the 15-month deployment, we lost four more, two of them happening in a day where they just rocked us. They like got really lucky. I don't even know if that's the word to describe it, but like I said, usually half the time, like, you know, with a mortar, they launch one out, they see where it lands, and they try to move and maneuver to hit in a better spot. But then they have to bail because they know that they're going to be identified. On this particular day, September 5th, 2004, the first one they hit right smack between the two main barracks of my unit, their headquarters. And from there, they walked them into the base between our barracks and the effing chow hall. And it's lunchtime, and we're on like green. So everyone just has their weapons, no helmets, no flak jackets, and they rocked us that day. We lost two amazing people that day and had 19 injuries, 19 Purple Hearts that day. Anything from losing an eyeball to, you know, just shrapnel in different places, shrapnel in someone's testicles, like just everything. But lost two soldiers that day, and they were the third and fourth people to die. And then 1 month later, on October 6th, my platoon was hit. I was not on the mission. My now husband was on the mission. He was my main squeeze at the time, you know, hush hush, fraternization type stuff. Same rank, but their mission was hit. And I so randomly, and I explained in the book, that's what's so crazy about the different perspectives. It's a dual memoir, so some of the chapters are told from my husband's perspectives and some from mine, so you get the perspective of him being on this truck, getting hit by a bomb, remembering a flashlight. Next thing you know, truck is on his face, knocking out all his teeth. And then from my perspective, it was so random that I happened to be, we were on night missions at this point, and most of the year we were. It was so random that I happened to be in the TOC, in the Tactical Operations Center, which I never typically was in. But I was visiting my homie who had guard duty, and I was playing rummy with her to try and keep her company before I had to go back for curfew. And curfew being, you know, we were on third shift, so I would be awake all night. So as I'm playing rummy with her, that's when the medevac call comes in 20 feet from me. And it's just crazy how all of it happened. Like then I catch wind, it's my platoon, it's the last truck, my boyfriend is in the last truck. Like, and then we end up finding out that you know, everyone thought that he was the one that was KIA, being the gunner on the back of the truck, trapped under the truck. All the people that were on the mission and halted and waiting on the medevac, they all assumed it was Hobbs that was KIA, and it wasn't. It was Jessica Covey, an amazing soul that who I dedicated my book to. And actually, she had, after the first four people, I love to tell this story. After the first four people that died in our unit, at each of the memorials on the base, they would play the Toby Keith song. And I'm so not hating on the gentleman in our unit that put together those slideshows, because it was very awesome that he would put together those pictures and slideshows. And the song is good. Toby Keith, American Soldier. It's a good song. But after those first four, like, going to those memorials is just dreadful. And after that, she walked away from that fourth one, and Jessica Covey had said, "You guys, if I die, don't you play that damn song at my memorial." She said, "You better play something like Damn It Feels Good to Be a Gangster and Throw My Boots Over the Power Line." And then they joked about maybe the Charles in Charge theme song. And so as I went through different ideas of what to put on this cover, which originally started as something different, it finally dawned on me, like, holy cow, I can hang Jessica's boots on the cover of my book on a power line and give her what she wanted. And so that's what meant so much to me. And I hung all five of them up there because they'll always be remembered.
Oh my God.
I know.
Like, I have no words. And of course, we never really know the meaning of the covers of our books or whatever we use, profile pictures, all that. And when you hear something like this, that just, like, what a beautiful thing that you did. Just beautiful. And I love how she said, "Don't play that song," because for some reason I was having a discussion with my husband. I think after someone had passed away, we've been losing so many people this past month. I told him I want a not a memorial, a celebration of life.
Yes,
we did it for my cousin. I want that because I want people to drink whatever they want. I want them to roast me or tell stories or whatever and celebrate that. I want to be remembered for something other than something so sad, you know? And I think we forget about that stuff because it's hard. It's mm-hmm. absolutely hard to lose somebody. But you, what you did by honoring her that way, God, that's amazing. It's so selfless and it's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
What prompted you to do a dual memoir? That right there is, I'm sure, is difficult. Like, even in my book, I did not name my husband. There's certain things I did not put in the book because of his position in the Army. And I was trying to be respectful. So there were certain things that I'm like, okay, I can't put this in there. But you did it. And what, yeah, why did you want to do that?
Honestly, that idea, that a awesome idea, came from my book coach, Lauren Eckhart. Lauren Eckhart Klump, she has now her own publishing company. But when I took her on as a book coach, as I'm telling her, like, you know, she's coaching me through all of it, hearing pre-reading some of my stuff. And that was when she threw that idea out there. She was like, wow, like, this is such an amazing story. And there's, like, two different things. You know, I'm telling her about what he remembers. And she's like, wow, like, you know, what would be amazing. So I give all the credit to her on that, for that idea. And as I I had to, like, tiptoe into that conversation with my husband, like, so this is what I want to do. If I'm gonna do it, I need, like, your cooperation. I need us to, you know, have these uncomfortable conversations and dig deep. And surprisingly enough, he was down with it. And on when we would have those conversations and start getting into them, and I already knew so much, you know, like I knew a lot, but there was so much I didn't know either. You know, there's so much that he has not said out loud and put out into the world. And I'm just sitting here listening to it in awe. And as I watched and listened to him talk about it, you could just tell it was like a relief for him and almost like a shocker. Like, people actually want to hear about this. Like, people care. Like, I've been holding this in forever, you know? And so it was therapeutic for both of us. Sometimes it was really scary. Like, you know, there was a situation where, when I had broke up with him, one of the million times in my book, that I started crushing on someone else and dating someone else. And like years ago, 17, 16 years ago, he heard about this. Like, we had to have that conversation, you know, that it was really hard. I had to take accountability. I had to lay my head in shame. So terrible. We end up getting back together. Life goes on. Well, guess who forgot about that over 17 years? Ryan. And so as we were talking about it again, and I'm like, so I'm on the part where, and I'm like, and I need to know, like, what were you thinking at that time? And he was like, you dated who? What? And I was like, what? Huh? Like, and that was hard. Like, so, you know, some of the stuff just gets forgotten about, and we had to deal with that.
I mean, I applaud you guys for doing that. You don't see that often at all in this book writing world, and to bring up stuff like that, that's very honorable, I think, because it's hard. It really is, mm-hmm. to talk about that and to put that out there for people. And oh, yeah. So what did you want from this book, putting it out there and sharing this with everybody?
Mm-hmm. I really wanted to be able to give a glimpse into combat, like life from a soldier's perspective, from entering the guard to being a high school student to suddenly in a traumatic combat zone, and then how that affects someone for a lifetime. And it could have positive effects in the future should you take the route of healing and post-traumatic growth, but also to give this space to what is really happening with mental health, with soldiers and their families, and to not tiptoe around that. Like, just let's honor it. Let's talk about it, and let's be mindful of it so that we can be better in the future, being proactive rather than reactive. And then so enlightening the world on that perspective, but also sending hope to people that need to hear it, for people who find themselves in those same dark places that I know you have found yourself as well after reading your book, you know, like to give them hope that, like, keep waking up, keep hanging in there. Like, you can change this, but it's gotta be you, and it's gonna be when you're ready for it and ready to give it its space.
Absolutely. I agree. And it's so important, whether we decide to write a book or post it on social media. I think it's so important to continue that conversation, because no one really understands, and we don't know what we don't know. And so it's important for people like you and I to try to bridge that gap, especially between the military and civilians, to understand what we go through, and even to communicate that to our family, right? Because they don't always understand You know, like when I came back from my first deployment, my mom's like, here's the kids. Okay, this is what needs to get done. I was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Like, I need time to mentally process that I'm here on ground and I need to step into this mom role when I just spent a year in this role. And so it's so difficult, but I didn't know how to talk about that because I just lashed out in anger and I didn't know how to communicate that because I didn't understand exactly what was going on. So for you to say, this is, you know, this is what I wanted to do is share this with the world. I think it's so important. And you don't all have to write a book. I'm not telling you to do that. I'm just telling you to have an open mind and be willing to have that talk. We need to continue to talk about this because it's not getting better.
No.
You know, and you're not alone and there shouldn't be an ugly stigma and I could go on forever, but
absolutely. You know. There is just so many stigmas and that's the thing. Like, let's change it and stop with the stigmas. Like, it's okay. This is real life. And it's actually been along way before now. This is just like now people are, you know, maybe taking a little bit more action than before. I started reading this book last night. I'm doing research for my second book and it's called The Unspeakable Mind, Stories of Trauma and Healing from the Front Lines of PTSD Science. And and one of the things that I wanted to reel it in. Get it, Jennifer. Where was I? Stigmas. Yes. I'll come back to that when I remember what I was saying. I know what it was. The PTSD, like, was not even acknowledged as a mental, like, wasn't even put in, like, the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, till 1980.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah. Like, you know, for years it was identified as, like, shell shock, you know, people that were close to artillery. And then they started to identify, people have shell shock that weren't around, loud, explosive. So I'm learning all this in here, and I'm just like, oh, my gosh, like, no wonder why it's such a stigma in society. Like, this is so, like, this is so new still, but there is so much research on it. And so let's just talk about it. Let's call it like it is. And then another thing I wanted to share from here, that piggybacks right off of what you just said. It's from Requiem for a Nun by William Faulkner. And he said, the past is never dead. It's not even past. And that's exactly what it is. Like, we won't let the past define our future, but, like, it's still here. Like, it's not even past. It will be with us forever. And it's just about living and thriving with life with it.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks for sharing that. I'm just like,
I know. I wish I do love sleep, but I kind of wish I could just read and I would get REM sleep from reading because I'm just over here like, oh my God.
That's, you want to like highlight the whole book.
I know.
It's insane.
And tell the library I lost it. I'll pay for it.
Yeah, right? Talk to us a little bit really quick about you resigned. So you have 2 master's degree and you resigned from doing something that you loved, from teaching. Mm-hmm. And you decided to go a different route. Now, there's a lot of people out there that are like, I could never. Uh-huh. Like, they want to stay in their safe space. So how did you come to that point? And what are you doing? Share with people what you're doing.
Oh, well, you're right. So many people are like, oh my God, I could never do that. I've had people legit say to me like, huh, I'm glad it ain't my wife resigning. And I'm like, whoa, thanks for the support. Like, I would say, like, it stems all the way back to about 7 years ago, so that would have been 5 years into teaching, when my husband and I had gotten back together. Again, all that's in the book. We were separated for 5 years, and then we got back together. And so getting back into his life and seeing how, like, out of 6-7 years after our deployment, still going through madness with everything, VA, med hold, this, that, and the other, and the, and how that's just such a trigger for you. You know, like, well, you should not have to jump through all these stinking hoops to get care for a military truck landing on your face from getting blown up in Iraq. Like, and then it ends up being quite a trigger, definitely affecting mental health, which then ends up affecting the dynamic and then your work, you know, like, it affects everything. And so when I started to get super frustrated observing that and observing other stories that I would hear from the VA or some of my experiences, that was when I was like, man, I really wish that I could just quit my job and advocate for veterans 24/7. And this, again, this is like 7 years ago. And I'm like, but I don't know how I could do that other than being a politician. And I don't want to be a politician. So put that to the side, back to school. You know, like, I do love to teach, and I was passionate. I like to keep striving for more. Like, I notice a lot of us veterans do, like, we just keep trying to, like, have more of an impact and more service for people. And so I found myself liking to, you know, I wanted to be a leader. And so then I got my second master's in educational leadership. And through taking those classes, I was like, like, I don't know if I want to do that. Like, that's, I'm not sure about that. That's kind of challenging my moral compass. And then as the years of teaching went on and kind of just seeing how that's really changing, I didn't dig some of that. And so then when I got back to writing my book and I got on this mission to follow the dream of writing it, there was a lot of personal development and a whole lot of growth in my spiritual realm of life, and a lot of soul searching, and really increase my prayer, like wanting, feeling like I was being called to do something else. And that's scary. That's scary, stepping away from a salary, a pension, you know, 12 years and 2 master's degrees, but who's counting? And to, like, make that leap. But I thought for a long time about it, and I prayed, and then I just knew, 100% that, like, yep, this is what I need to do. And so, like, you know, I needed to show, like, hard prints for my husband. So I had, like, my visual, you know, because I'm a teacher and everything. And I'm like, okay, honey, here we go. Here is if I sell 0 books. Here is if I substitute teach 0 days. Here is if I make $0. We're going to be okay. And he was on board. Again, surprising. Like, and it has been exactly what I wanted it to be. It has been days of self-fulfillment and following, like, what was being put on my heart and being able to start making those connections and having doorways open to where I can follow the purpose that I know I've been given. And although I would like for things to happen overnight, it ain't gonna happen. Like, and I'm smart enough to know that. You just need to tell me, you know, at midnight when I'm mind effing myself and need to get out of my head. But it has really brought so much fulfillment to me. And that is what I wanted. I don't need Stephen King money to, although that would be pretty sweet. I don't need Stephen King money to bring me a lifetime of happiness. Like, I'm excited about the choice I've made and the person I'm stepping into and the dreams I'm going to continue to set, and goals I'm going to set, and the dream I'm going to continue to follow.
That is so amazing. I don't want to put this. Leaving what we're used to in that safe space and going off to do this crazy dream of ours is so scary and lonely, but I don't know what it is. I try to tell people, and I know you've seen this, do what sets your soul on fire. Like, if that's what you really want, don't be afraid to do it. There's going to be times where you're like, holy shit, what am I doing? And maybe I need to go back and do something else. So I love that you continue to do this, because that is what your passion is. And some people think that we're crazy. Like, why aren't you working? Why aren't you doing this? And you're like, because this is what I really want. And I think we're in that stage in our life. Maybe it's our age. I don't know. Well, we're just like, you know what? Life is too short. Let's focus on this, not just for me, but for others, because we understand. So I think it's so amazing that you're doing that. Honestly, it's not for everybody, but for, like you said, leaning into our faith and doing all this, it's hard, because I know I've lost my way a million times over. So to try to pray about it and be spiritual and all these things, it's so hard. So what advice would you give to somebody in a similar situation who's just like, I love teaching, I have degrees, but I'm not really feeling it anymore. Like, I want to do this.
Oh goodness. That's a good question, Annette. One thing I want to say before I probably forget your question and we'll have to ask you again. In a book that I had read last summer, two summers ago, when I was doing research in the midst of writing the book, it was it had done a study on prisoners of war, I believe from Vietnam. And in this study of prisoners of war versus non-prisoners of war, they ended up finding out that, like, these people that they followed up with years later that were prisoners of war and ones that were not, that the people that had been prisoners of war had actually ended up thriving more in life in a couple different areas, like relationships with others, hope for the future, an increased spirituality. And so when you talk about, you know, like, how that might seem wild, but, you know, I think that we've gotten to the point that, you know, life is too short. It makes me think of that. Like, I think from the things that we have been through, we now have a bigger appreciation for the sweet taste of life and want to keep it that way, you know, not just live to survive. And so back to your question, to give advice, look at me, I just remembered it, to give advice to someone who's considering that, I would say, don't be impulsive, of course, like, don't react, you know, take time and respond. But trust yourself and know that as you even go to that space to dream big, to think differently, to, like, oh my God, step outside of the umbrella and everything that's expected of you, know that fear is going to come at you like a beast. It's going to come at you tenfold, because as you are trying to level up, or whatever you want to call it, you are going to be far more vulnerable and it's going to be all over you. And so to be aware of that, to expect that, and always to go back to yourself, self-reflection, you know, if it's prayer, if it's meditation, if it's just more reflection, like, dig deep, trust yourself. Remember that life is short, and do what's going to make you happy within reason.
Thank you for saying don't be impulsive, because sometimes my husband has to be like, okay, this is all emotional thinking right now. You're emotionally reacting. Step back, take a day. And I'm like, but I want it now. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And then surround yourself with people like Jennifer, that will put you, who has been there and that could bring you back to reality and make you think about things. I think one of the things that's helped me so much is being around positive people, like-minded people, like-hearted people who uplift me. Because I think we spent so many years doubting ourselves because you don't have that support system. But then when you get that, your people, that's when you're like, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah.
And it's going to work because of this and this, but I have to do this and this. And so, yeah, there's this whole thing. Mm-hmm. But so what do you foresee for you? What do you want to happen, if you can say? Because I know you were always like me, working behind the scenes on so many things. What do you want to happen? What do you want to see in the next 5 years or three?
Oh, well,
besides another book.
So another book and continuing to write. I really want to do a children's book series that is kind of based on like trauma and military experiences or trauma outside of the military, to where, because you come across some every now and then in the children in education, and you're like, wow, this is phenomenal. And there's just not that many out there. And kids need to be able to relate to what Billy and Joanne, like people around them, have going on. But I also, I started my own business. And so as I'm stepping into this space of trying to figure out how best I can help people, veterans and their families, and in the end, hopefully help other veterans from those efforts or other people. So just continuing to be a service to other people through a couple different ways. I have actually an awesome guy and now my friend that is in Nigeria. He's helping me so much with my website. And so today he is working on plugging in some stuff to where I can get my personal development workshop up there for people that had missed it the first time. They can go on there and have access to it, and then have the opportunity to get some personal development, like one-on-one accountabilities coaching with me. And then in addition to that, like, I am still working to find other outlets that, you know, like, I keep praying, Annette. I keep praying and asking God, like, okay, I'm being patient over here. Like, let me know what you want me to do, you know? And so like different things have come up. And so like, for example, I am going to get the opportunity to volunteer a couple hours a week to lead a virtual social club with the Veterans Spouse Network. And so like being able to help the family members by just being there as a veteran and hearing from them, learning from them. And then I'm super excited that in November I had attended the Lone Survivor Foundation Women's Retreat, which was amazeballs. I highly recommend it to anyone. They have male, they have female, they have spouse ones, and it was so good. And on the fourth day, I went up to the amazing team leader. I pulled her aside and I said, hey, I would be really interested on how to become a team leader with this organization and help other veterans. And she said, she cocked her head to the side and looked at me and she said, would you believe that we all feel the same way too? And we want to put your name up. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like crying immediately. Oh. And so I actually get to go to another retreat in May, but this time not as an attendee. This time I am shadowing the team leader so that I see how it goes from a team leader's perspective. And then I will then be able to be a team leader with the Lone Survivor Foundation.
That's so awesome. Good for you. That is so awesome.
I'm so excited. And I got some other speaking engagements coming up and things like that. So just trying to roll with it. And I got my podcast, Celebrate the Struggle.
Yes.
that's been fantastic to continue learning from other people. But like, I wanted a space, a safe space for me to continue to share my voice with, you know, all the other rambling I do outside of my books, and a place where other people could share as well, again, to continue to enlighten the world and share a message of hope.
That is so awesome. I love that. And I think it's so important to share all those organizations that are doing so much. There's so many out there that we don't know about. I'm constantly seeing people trying to reach out. I'm asking for assistance with therapy or just camaraderie or whatever. And there's so many. Like, I wish there was just like one website where we could just
I know.
So no, that's awesome. You're going to be amazing. And I'm so excited to see like all the things that you're doing. So you guys, you need to, so connect with thejenniferhobbs.com, go to her website, listen to Celebrate the Struggle. I think it's amazing.
They do too. They clearly do too.
They do too. Cause they wanted to chime in at that moment. So Go find her, because it's important to, like I said before, to surround yourself with people like that, to connect with people like this, because it gets lonely. When we're out of uniform, we forget who we are. We forget our identity. We don't know what to do next. And, you know, don't wait, like just go contact her. And what words would you give to, what would you like to leave this with? What would you like to tell people?
Well, one thing I would really like to put out there is that as I continue to work, you know, grow myself and continue to learn more to be able to help other people, the second book that I'm working on, I want to be able to really show the world more about the war at home. So that requires me to do more research on everyone's perspectives, the parents of the soldiers that were deployed, the siblings, the children that maybe were conceived before deployment or during or after. And I want to hear their stories. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be on my podcast like that. If you want to share your story on there, rad, because that's what I want to definitely share with the world. However, if you're not comfortable with that, I just want to have a conversation with you so that I can learn more about it and figure out how best we can support our veterans, but also our hidden heroes that stand on the home front. So that's what I would like to leave out there, because that's my mission. And definitely reach out to me if you want to stay updated with the things I got going on and be the first to hear about it. Sign up for my newsletter at thejenniferhobbs.com. And if you don't check out the show notes to see the links and you want to reach out to me, it's Jennifer at thejenniferhobbs.com. Like pretty much just Jennifer Hobbs, Google search, or author Jennifer Hobbs. You'll find me, and I would love to hear from you.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad that the weather let us have this episode today.
No doubt. And it's so wild that, again, it happens to be on a day where the random weather hits both myself in Illinois and you in Texas.
I think, you know, someone's speaking to us, but it's okay. We made it through. So
yes,
thank you so much. For those of you that are watching on YouTube or on Facebook, in the notes, you will see her contact information. Reach out to her. Don't let anything stop you, and just keep going. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.